Court, Your Honors. Barry Gebeke with the Stoll Law Firm, Ord, Nebraska.
Good morning.
The facts in this deal are...
We know.
We echo that sentiment.
We agree.
But I think there's a couple things to think about as the court decides what it wants to do. And the first one is, you know, they're married. They're married in April of 1990. Monty sells his interest in the Mammoth entities for $1.7 million under an agreement dated August 31, 2006. That agreement contains, Exhibit 1, contains some specific provisions on how those insurance proceeds in the event of death were going to be applied and credited. Then after that...
And that agreement, Jamie Mammoth is not a party to.
She's not a party to it, right. Although then when they filed, when Jamie Mammoth filed the complaint for dissolution of marriage on February 9, 2011, she was represented by counsel, of course. Monty was not. She indicated he'd suffered from alcoholism. But after filing that complaint in December of 2011, in February 15, 2012, she and Monty go to Heritage Bank and they sign that note disclosure and security agreement to borrow the $344,000. And the Heritage Bank loan officer at trial admitted Heritage Bank had reviewed the agreement. They agreed, or they were looking to the agreement for collateral. And, you know, when you look at the values, the house was valued at $250,000 in the divorce in the property statement, and the Heritage Bank debt was $340,000. I mean, you know, just the practical experience of the court and common sense, a bank's going to be looking to those feedlot payments or else it's not going to make a backwards loan.
So the house was also security?
Yes. Not as... I do not believe the record contains, Your Honor, any deed of trust on a specific lien on the house.
Okay.
But the note and disclosure agreement that Jamie Mammoth and Monty signed specifically granted rights in insurance proceeds. It specifically references that. And so after you do that, if you look at the math, and we're on, if you look at page 8 of the brief that was filed for the personal representative of Monty's estate and the Mammoth entities, when you go through and look at the math after the decree was entered on May 30 of 2012, Jamie Mammoth's in and up with $296,000, and Monty's in and up and change, and Monty's in and up with $272,000 and change, but that specifically included that last feedlot payment. So, you know, I mean, that's a conscionable property and debt division. But then after that happens, and in the decree, the decree further specifically provides that Jamie Mammoth is going to be the beneficiary on these two life insurance policies. But after it, when she keeps the money, as has happened,
How could the decree even allow for that, given the agreement on the stock sale that the insurance policies were to be available to be applied to any further obligation on the Mammoth, you know, debt to Monty? How could that happen? I mean, how did they get around that?
Judge, Monty didn't have an attorney when the divorce was negotiated and the decree was approved.
But does the, but and Jamie the terms Mamet of the stock did. Agreement trump what was later entered in the divorce decree then? I mean, because the terms were already set in the stock sale that those life insurance policies were to be security for the obligation that is, was owed to Monty.
And I don't think, Your Honor, I think that that is not disputed. Heritage Bank and Jamie Mamet, everybody agrees that that $500,000, or whether you say the interest benefits on the $501,000, was credited to the remaining sums due under his buyout from the Mamet entities.
So wouldn't that go to the estate on his death then?
Sure could.
That was the intention, right? Was to finish paying out what Mamet owed to Monty on the stock buyout.
I believe, Your Honor, under that agreement, Exhibit 1, when those payments are made, when Monty gets those payments, that is credited against the amount that the Mamet entities would have to pay. But then we go to the divorce, and in the divorce, the deal is cut that Jamie is the beneficiary of those policies.
Was there anything preventing, anything in writing that prevented him from changing the beneficiary on the life insurance policies?
Well, you've got the decree, the purported decree, Judge.
But I mean, was there anything else that said that he was restricted in what he could do with those policies? You're just saying the decree trumped everything on the policies.
Oh, okay, you're talking about Exhibit 1, Judge?
Right.
Yes, in Exhibit 1, just says seller agrees to keep in full force and effect during the term of this agreement those two New York Life policies insuring the life of seller, which policies have or will be set over to seller as owner and insured. So that agreement says that he needs to be the owner of the policies. And then we go to the divorce decree where Jamie Mamet is purporting to be the owner.
And would you agree that we can't do anything with the divorce decree at this point? I mean, it's a done deal, and there was no appeal, and we can't alter the terms of that decree.
Correct, Your Honor, but with the way that this all plays out, when you look at page 18 and 19, when you look at the math, after he dies, if we allow, if you just say we're going to affirm the trial court judge, Jamie Mamet is in and up with $548,000, and Monty's estate is in and up with $22,000 and change. And
did you indicate that in the loan agreement with Heritage Bank that there were terms in there about the bank having rights to insurance proceeds?
Yes.
That's in
yes.
The loan agreement with
the
Heritage
loan
Bank?
Agreement, Your Honor, is, we'll find it here. The loan agreement, it was a commercial security agreement. I believe those are exhibits 6 and 8. The loan agreement, or the consumer security agreement, excuse me, that Jamie Mamet signed said, all contract rights, including proceeds from the contract agreement for the purchase of the corporate stock, you know, or exhibit 1, all proceeds relating to the foregoing, including insurance, general intangibles, and account proceeds. Now, when you read the brief of Heritage Bank, and when you read the brief of Heritage Bank and Jamie Mamet, they will say, well, there was never an assignment of insurance proceeds by Heritage Bank. Therefore, Jamie gets to keep them. I think that's going to be an argument that you're going to hear. But she signed the commercial security agreement granting a security interest in those security in those insurance proceeds to pay off the debt that he was ordered to pay in the decree.
And Mr. Gevecki, before, and I know you're into your rebuttal now, but It appears that both parties can agree on one thing, or have agreed on one thing, and that is the desire to have the district court enter a declaratory judgment.
Correct.
And this is a bit unusual in that, as my understanding, there is an estate proceeding going on. I don't know that our record's very clear about that, but it seems to suggest that.
Correct.
So what was the, and then you fully tried this case. And then the court said, I'm not going to make a decision on, I'm dismissing the declaratory judgment. So what's the best authority that we should enter a declaratory judgment under the law?
I think by statute, if you have all the parties that are the stakeholders in it, we had the PR, the bank, the MAMMOT entities, there is a declaratory judgment statute that allows the district court to make these determinations. Mm-hmm. I mean,
but if there's another proceeding involving these claims, you know, the law suggests that the court shouldn't take on a declaratory judgment action.
I think if you would look, I believe, Your Honor, if we look in the transcript, there was an order entered in the county court holding these claim, holding any determination of the county court in abeyance or holding up any decision in the county court until this was litigated.
So if we would agree that declaratory judgment was appropriate, what is the relief? Wouldn't we need to send it back to the court? Say the dismissal was in error, send it back to the court for resolution of the claims?
Correct, or not only that, maybe you could do some equity relief up here and sort out who gets the money. And then when it goes back, you know, once we get to the county court, that's just, that would be more of the administrative deal of just paying out those claims.
Thank you. We've taken you over.
Thank you.
How much time did we take, Mr. Gebicki, over? Would you add 2 minutes to the appellee's time? Good morning again.
Good morning again. May it please the court, Larry Beike representing the appellees. I want to make it clear from the outset that this 2006 contract was drafted by neither Mr. Gebicki or myself. It took a lot of reading for me to understand, but I think the key to it is this $500,000 insurance proceeds should have been called a credit. It would have made things a lot simpler, I think, because that's all they meant in the contract. These insurance proceeds were going to make Monty the owner, and he's got the contracts. But if he dies, then that $500,000 that he is due, he gets it from the insurance, and it's credited to our obligation, the MAMMOT entity's obligation. That's what it means. It's got to mean. And I don't think any of us, you guys may, but we don't disagree that that's what it says, okay? It does say and since Monty owned the policies, I mean, he had control over them. Then when we get to the divorce, and everybody's aware, obviously aware of these contract payments. We get to the divorce, Monty, the insurance policies, Jamie is made the owner of those policies by the divorce decree. And this debt obligation...
The owner or the beneficiary?
No, I think she... Well, I'm not sure. She's definitely the beneficiary. I thought she was the owner as well. But I'm not sure. But whether she's the owner or not, by the decree, has to be kept in force, and she's going to get the beneficiary. And it's important to know before I go on, even if you could go back and look at the decree and deal with that, at the time of the decree, these insurance policies were not worth nothing. They were term policies. They weren't worth anything. So you can't go back and throw the amount of the policies into the mix. Monty was required to pay from those insurance, or from the contract payments, this loan. And this loan, there wasn't, not that it makes any difference, I don't think, but there was no security. The house was not security for this loan. Okay.
Only the contract payments were security for the loan?
That's right. Okay. That's right. And although the security agreement does mention insurance proceeds, Heritage Bank, the testimony from the officer of Heritage Bank was that they did not consider that they had a security interest in that. they felt that they had to have an assignment of the policy to have a security interest in it. I didn't go into that in my brief, but I think that that is the law. I think there's authority for that, that if you want security for a life insurance policy, you've got to have an assignment.
Because otherwise they had no control over
no.
Who was the beneficiary or not.
That's right. That's right. You've got to have an assignment. And they didn't get one.
Is it significant that the purchase agreement, although it included these insurance proceeds, as you say, perhaps as a credit to the payments, didn't require that Mammoth Enterprises be the beneficiary?
I don't see how it's significant. Like I say, I think a thorough reading of it indicates what they intended was it be a credit. Okay? And why would, also, why would the Mammoth entities be a beneficiary? They're the ones making the payments. They don't get the money. And I think that's what the district judge didn't quite get. She thought it was collateral somehow, but it was supposed to be a credit is what it's supposed to be. Okay? Judge Moore, you raised an interesting question, which I don't know the answer to, but I'm going to answer it anyway. What do you do? Can you declare, make a declaratory judgment? I think Mr. Gebeke is right in that we held, and the probate court has been held in abeyance pending this action. Okay.
And you now, think that's in our record?
I hope so. a lot of exhibits. I think it's part of that. But the next question you posed, though, was what can you do? Do you have to send it back? I didn't brief that, but my thought is I hope not. I don't think so. I think you've got all the evidence available to you that the district court did. I think it's a de novo review, so I think you can determine how much are those contract payments and who gets them. I think we've definitely got a controversy here. The best authority for whether a declaratory judgment is available is the statute itself. I think it fits squarely within the statute. We've got the contract payments, we've got the divorce, and even though I think it's obvious who gets what, the Mammoth entities don't think it's obvious, and they're holding the money, and somebody has to decide. There has to be some kind of court order telling them what to do with this money.
So the question really boils down to that, whatever the number is, 70 or 80, whatever that number is, whether it goes to the estate,
right,
or whether it goes to the bank.
That's right.
Those are the choices.
Is that the only disagreement right now?
Well, except for the $5,000.
Right. Okay.
Well, and the unjust enrichment issue.
Right.
That's right. Okay. And just briefly to speak to that, I don't think there's any unjust enrichment issue because, as the district judge decided, clearly Jamie was entitled to the insurance policy. She was the beneficiary under the divorce, and she got them. I don't know how you could say she was unjustly enriched.
And as to the $250,000 she paid on the
Heritage
Bank debt, she can make a claim against the estate to try to recover that.
For what that's worth, but yes, that's what she's doing.
That's not before us.
Right.
That's right.
Okay.
That's not before you, but that's what she's done. Yes. Yes. I had one more point, but I forgot what it was.
I'm still troubled by what we do if we agree with you that the declaratory judgment was a proper remedy,
mm-hmm,
as to whether we send it back for determination, because we don't know. We have nothing to review as to whether the district court would have found the money should have gone to the estate or the money should have gone to the bank.
I don't understand. You have the whole record before you.
But the district court didn't make that decision.
Didn't make that decision. Well,
so how do we say
I hope you're wrong, because I don't want to be back here
the district court erred.
You'd like to cut a step out of this process.
I would certainly like to.
I appreciate
to, yes,
that. I understand.
And it was difficult. I thought that at least a decision would be made, but it wasn't. You're right. So please don't send it back if you don't have to. it's not an argument. It's a plea.
I gotcha.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. You are excused, and the case is submitted, and we are now in recess.